Mini episode 801 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 801. You've got your favorite football talkers anywhere with you to break down the NFL wild card round. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross here wishing you a happy new year. Looking ahead to a weekend of football. Notice I didn't qualify that, Kyle, by saying good football, great football, whatever. It's going to run the gamut, but probably mostly veer towards the subpar. Much like .. some of my metrics from the course of the season in making picks here. I'll get the best one out of the way on my overall picks. 8-7-1 last week, 125, 118, and 12 for the year. So I got to go 8-3 to get under the wire for a 52.4%. I got to go 8-3 in the playoffs to make that happen. From there, it certainly doesn't get any prettier. 1-2 on my big three. 20-28-3 is where I finish up on that. 0-1 on my lock pick, putting me, it's probably less shameful to just say 3 out of 17 rather than give you the L number. Kyle, if my calculations were correct on this last week, I think 1-2, 36-52, yeah, and 1 for the year, I believe. So I'm working on for the playoffs is all we can say.
Who the fuck gives a damn about the regular season, okay, Rick Morris? This was the shittiest NFL regular season I can remember, and I can't, and I'm not just saying it because I wasn't very good. The ratings were down. Betting was down in the NFL. There was a story that was published at ESPN Chalk this morning that said the handle was down overall. I can't remember the last year that the handle was down from the previous season. So something was going on with the NFL. I don't know what caused the decline in interest, but there was certainly a decline in analytics and common sense, I can tell you. At least that's my excuse for the subpar record. But it's the playoffs. We wiped the slate clean. Unfortunately, the CFL playoffs are already over, so I can't count those like Chris Berman likes to do sometimes, but which is actually kind of funny. One of his few funny remaining jokes is he prepares to, quote, accept a new role, in the words of John Skipper over at ESPN. But I'm ready to go, man. Weird, like you kind of alluded to, some pretty crappy teams made the playoffs this year.
Well, at least average to mediocre. And again, a couple teams right now, especially with their quarterback situation being what, I'll agree with you on the present state of the two teams that are going to play the first game when we get to that in a few minutes here, because without any semblance of quarterback play, you're absolutely right about them. A couple things I will say about what you just said. First of all, to point out for accuracy here, I think week by week, since 2012. I mean, you've been 60% or above every year on the show, so nothing for people to cry about with the way that it went this year. These things happen. As far as how it goes and the level of interest that there was in betting this year, I'm going to go ahead and just kind of guess off the top of my head that that meant that Vegas probably took it in the pooper a little bit less than they would have otherwise, because the kind of read that I was getting was that the public was doing better than usual this year, which I think had something to do with your particular run of luck.
Yes, that's actually true. This was the book's least – I mean, the books always make money. I mean, there's never been an NFL season where they haven't made money. I mean, anyone who's been to Las Vegas knows that John Q. Public and his $50 bet on his favorite team every Sunday ain't paying the mortgage, quite frankly. Vegas is shiny, nice, and expensive for a reason. But overall handle was down, and overall winnings were down as well for the house. So, as you kind of alluded to, I tend to bet with the house, not the public, and not coincidentally, I did worse this year than previous years. A lot worse.
It was a weird year. It was a really, really, really crazy year. I went through, and I'm going to have some stats for each team as we're going through the games here. I'm also going to go through and give you my individual handle on how I did on each of the teams here this year. And what's really, really interesting is there's two teams that I did great on this year that are in the playoffs, and they're both playing this weekend. And I also did really great on them last year. And one team that I did very good on that I did great on last year. So there's some correlation there. And then there's some teams where I just wasn't very good on them this year or last year. So we'll see how that shakes out. I don't know if it'll give me any more confidence in the plays I'm about to make with them this week because, again, these are some interesting kind of lines. And we talk about this in terms of gambling with the NFL. This is why the NFL – I won't even say anymore doesn't try to discourage gambling, but all but overtly encourages it, especially with all their stuff with the whole daily fantasy, you know, thing here, which is just a thinly veiled ruse to get people to gamble. Because who would care about these games if it wasn't for the point spreads, Kyle? A lot of these playoff games in the first, I'll say two rounds, at least the first weekend, who would care if not for the point spreads?
I think we're going to get some potentially good matchups next weekend, if everything breaks the way I think it's going to now, you know, the way I think things are going to break has tended not to happen this NFL season, but I think at least three of the four matchups next week could be pretty good. New England's probably going to be faced with a pretty overmatched opponent, regardless of who it is. But, yeah, I mean, for me, I don't think there's any must-see games. Maybe the last one of the weekend I would watch if I wasn't in this industry. But, yeah, it's a pretty weak game. And, you know, it's funny you talk about having a handle on certain teams. There were just a number of them this year that made the playoffs that I just don't respect or I don't regard. I cannot think of a year ever where three teams that I have ranked outside my top 20 made the playoffs. I mean, maybe that happens once in a year, but it happened three, you know, and it's Detroit, Miami, and Houston, who I have really low. Houston I have as the worst-ranked team that wasn't a bottom feeder in the whole league. I think I had Houston 26. The only teams lower than them were, like, Jacksonville, Chicago, the Jets, you know, the Rams, the Browns, the Niners, those teams. I mean, there was just no other team I had ranked lower than them, and they're actually favored this weekend because, you know, I talk about three teams outside the top 20. That doesn't even include an Oakland team that will be starting Connor Cook, the first time, I believe, since the merger I read that a quarterback will make his starting debut in a playoff game. And the merger occurred in 1970, yes. Just so we're all clear.
Yes, exactly. But this is one of these things, though. You and I have talked about this off air a little bit. My top tier goes 1 through 8 right now. Yours is probably about close to that. Would you agree with me that the NFL this year really was kind of a bell curve and that you've got that clump of bottom feeders you talk about at the bottom? I think what you're talking about with these teams that are unimpressive making the playoffs, I think it's a function of not much separating, say, 9 through 26, at least not as much as we would usually think is the case. You get into the scheduling, who plays who during the year, who got what quarterback play at what time, who caught a few breaks here and there. You're looking at probably a thinner bunch of hairs separating playoff from non-playoff teams probably for those last couple spots than almost any year we can remember, I would think.
Yes, I would agree with that. I would say you're right. About 9 through 26, there was a lot of movement during the course of the year. Records in close games is something I'm going to go into with some of these surprise teams. That's why they made the playoffs. There were teams that really just could not win a close game to save their lives, such as Philadelphia and San Diego, who I actually think, quite frankly, were just as good as a few of these teams that made the playoffs. I know people don't want to hear that because of one loss record, but in my opinion, it's true. So, and the league had far less great teams this year. I looked this up earlier in the week. I believe there were 7 teams last year who finished with a point differential of plus 100 or higher. This year, there were only 3.
Wow.
That's really low. And then the 3 were the Patriots, the Cowboys, and the Falcons. None of them were playing. So I kind of had those 3 actually in a tier themselves. And then I kind of had a sub 1B tier. I know you love the A and Bs of the tiers. And
yeah.
You know, I would put Kansas City, Pittsburgh, Seattle, and Green Bay all on that tier. But, you know, the Giants are kind of in a tier to themselves. And then, you know, there's the other 4.
I've got the Giants in with the group you mentioned there and above the Seahawks just because of my disdain for the way the Seahawks so often mailed it in during the season and really were unimpressive relative to their level of talent so often. But that was how I saw it. We get to this weekend here in particular.
Yeah, let's go
for the game that's going to kick this. Yeah, the game's going to kick this off. And as I said to you off air, you know, I think you and I'm going to put us over. You don't get any better NFL coverage anywhere than you get with us. You get obviously some entertainment mixed in with your analysis. We do it all. We hit literally every gear, and I say that in all due humility. But as far as fun, I love just letting it kind of breathe a little bit more during the playoffs. I love getting to kind of do this. Don't have our eye on the clock as much, so this may perhaps translate a little bit more to the listeners. Perhaps these are your favorite ones of the year too, and I am having a great amount of fun just getting into the specifics here and on the games that we have. We lead with the game that ESPN is paying $100 million to televise. Let that rattle around in your heads, ladies and gentlemen. They pay $100 million a year to get a wild card game, and I think they always draw the short straw. I remember how it's gone the last couple of years. Yeah, it's always been the game nobody else wanted, and it was clear this was going to be the game nobody else wanted. The 12-4 Raiders, asterisk, that was with David Carr, at the 9-7 Houston Texans, 4:35 Eastern time from NRG Stadium in Houston on, of course, ESPN. NRG Stadium, the place that will host Super Bowl 51, which I assure you, either of these teams will be in. Sean McDonough, John Gruden, Lisa Salters on the call. Houston is laying 3.5 points in this game, up from 1.5. To give you some numbers for each team here, Houston, they were 16th in my year-ending power ranking, 17th on the FDH strength of schedule metric, 13th on impressiveness of victories, which that's basically more or less half strength of schedule and half number of games that you want in a formula. Passing offense, 29th in the league. This is all on yards, these next couple ones. 8th on rushing offense, interestingly. 2nd on pass defense. That may come into play. It should come into play this weekend. 12th in pass defense. You get the DVOA. You were oohing and aahing when I mentioned this off air. They were 29th overall in DVOA. 30th on the offensive side of the ball. 7th on the defensive side of the ball. And 3rd in time of possession among teams this year. On games for Houston, I was pretty accurate, decently accurate this year, 9-6-1. I was 11-7 a year ago, so I've got a pretty good handle on them. On Oakland, once again, asterisk to all these numbers because it was with David Carr, 14th in the power rankings right now. That's 14th without David Carr. I'd have them higher with David Carr. 12th on strength of schedule, 2nd on impressiveness of victories, 13th on passing offense, 6th on rushing offense, 24th on pass defense, 23rd on rush defense, 11th in DVOA, 7th in offensive DVOA, again with David Carr, I can't say this enough, 23rd in defensive DVOA, 6th in time of possession in the league. Oakland this year, I was 7-7-2 on them. I was 9-7 on them a year ago on being accurate. And my lean in this game is going to be to the home team. You just can't feel good about picking either one of these teams here, but particularly when you look at Houston's defensive numbers, Houston particularly how they've played at home. And it's a situation where Brock Osweiler, we know that he's bad. We know that he's basically more or less like standard issue bad, but you're throwing a rookie in for his first game, and you may see a bad that makes Brock Osweiler, nothing at this point is going to make him look good, but even mediocre. You'll take mediocre out of your quarterback in a game like this. And mediocre comparatively is what Osweiler is probably going to end up being. In an ugly, like 16-9 kind of a game, I've got your Houston Texans undeservedly advancing to round two, Kyle Ross.
The Houston Texans were outscored this year by like 49 points, I believe. It was 40-something.
Yep.
I think it was 49. That is the fourth worst point differential by a playoff team in the modern era. Now, Houston fans will be happy to know that the only three worse all actually won their first playoff game. but those teams were all underdogs. So I think it's safe to say if you want to put a bow on the 2016 Houston Texans season, I think it's absolutely fair to say they are the worst team to ever be favored in an NFL playoff game. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that, and quite frankly, again, in another circumstance, now again, Oakland might not have lost their division had it not been for losing Carr at the end. But in a situation where they've got Carr, they're the favorites, and I undeniably go with them on the road. I can't stress enough how much that changed the entire complexion of this game.
Okay, a couple things. Number one, I'll just get this out of the way, spoiler, I'm not picking this game. Once it became apparent that the Texans were going to be favored, I was out. I actually would have taken them, and you can tell the odds makers anticipated most people would do, otherwise they wouldn't have opened them as a favorite. Had the Texans been a dog here, I absolutely would have taken them. Do you agree that the Matt McGloin to Connor Cook move is kind of irrelevant? It's just that they don't have Derek Carr, right? I mean, like you would not be doing cartwheels over the Raiders if Matt McGloin was starting here, would you?
No, that's accurate. And I'll tell you this, that the Oakland team I saw, watching footage of them after Carr went down on Christmas Eve and then especially against Denver last week, and this is one of these things, I mean, you know, you laugh when I talk about gut feelings or anything like that, but Oakland,
yes,
to me, felt like pre-David Carr emergence Oakland. Remember those years that they had? And I'm not even necessarily talking about when they were like the dregs of the league necessarily, but when they were like a 5-11 type team. And I'm not calling them a 5-11 team now, but they looked like the Oakland Raiders of old, not this new and improved model. That's just what I feel in my gut watching them, the feel that I get. So no, Matt McGloin wouldn't have made the difference here. I just think it could be even uglier with Connor Cook in there, who I said when he came out was a hugely overrated draft prospect. And somebody who I don't expect to do anything in the NFL.
Now, is that because he routinely broke the heart of Ohio State?
No, because I thought Taj Boyd was going to be pretty good at the next level. He did the same thing, so you can't throw that at me. Taj Boyd kind of surprised
Boyd.
Me. I thought he was going to have a future at the next level, and I know Deshaun Watson's going to have a future at the next level. Take him number one,
yeah,
Brownies, please. So.
What?
Yeah, I love being Clemson quarterbacks.
They could
Deshaun
get
Watson, baby. Deshaun Watson. So, yeah. So you can't tell me that's why I don't like Connor Cook. I just don't think he's any good at the next level. And it's a thing where you want a point of comparison. You go back a couple of years here. Now, again, this guy managed to kind of stumble through a little bit better than I think Cook was able to. But T.J. Yates, kind of a similar thing, ironically, with Houston.
Yes.
Having to go with a quarterback when Matt Schaub was injured. That's kind of the spot that we're in here, similar.
You are really overrating DJ or Deshaun Watson, by the way. Okay. Just as a side note.
Number one, baby.
There's no way they're going to take him number one. They could get him number one in the second round, I believe. I think you maybe want to.
You're being silly season guy, Kyle. You're being silly season nitpicker guy.
I'm just being honest, guy. I'm telling you what the people are saying right now. I'm not here to be right. I'm just here to tell you the people what's
people
going on.
People are nitpicking.
Well,
people are missing
then,
the big picture.
No, just because they're nitpicking, I mean, if you can get him in the second round, why wouldn't you wait? They're not taking him first overall.
Russell Wilson version two. I wouldn't risk it.
Holy shit. You and calling Dean Ambrose, Roddy Piper, and Deshaun Watson, and Russell Wilson. Will you stop with these goddamn comparisons all the time? You know, I would feel bad for the Oakland Raiders, by the way, going into this game, if they weren't such a lucky team during the regular season, 8-1 straight up in games decided by 7 points or less, the lack of luck hit them at the worst possible time. Obviously, the Carr injury, they had to go in with a backup quarterback against the best pass defense in the league in the final game of the regular season on the road. It cost them the division. So yeah, it's really tough to like the Raiders in this spot. They were outgained, by the way, on a per-game basis this year over the course of the season. Houston, I will say this, they did outgain their opponents at least. So that's if you're looking for something kind of between, you know, inside the numbers, that's something you can hang your hat on if you want to take Houston. The total, you will notice on this game, is extraordinarily low by modern NFL standards. That really shouldn't come as a surprise due to the quarterback situation. I think it's 36.5 right now. Houston games, on average, second lowest scoring in the league, though I think not quite 36.5 points per game. So, and it's a public under too, which is very rare. The public is on the under in this game, which you very, very rarely see.
Exactly, but the public has obviously surmised how bad both of these offenses are at this point in time, especially passing offenses, and it is a passing league. So
that does kind of determine that disproportionately. The nightcap game, well, we'll see how much better this one is. It's the 9-7 Lions at the 10-5-1 Seahawks. Saturday night, 8:15 Eastern time from CenturyLink Field in Seattle on NBC with Michaels, Collinsworth, Tafoya, and Heather Cox on the call. This is a game where Seattle opened laying 7.5 points. They are now up to 10 at this point. Seattle, 8th in my year-ending power rankings, a team that, again, very unimpressive relative to their level of talent, and a lot of times just sleepwalked a lot, inexcusable. 29th and tied for 29th in strength of schedule also, too. 26th in impressiveness of victories, 10th in passing offense, 25th in rushing offense, uncharacteristic of the Seahawks, 8th in passing defense, 7th in rushing defense, 9th in DVOA, 17th in offensive DVOA, 5th in defensive DVOA, 22nd in time of possession. Again, uncharacteristic of the Seahawks. I was 8-8 on the Seahawks picking them this year. I was 11-7 last year, a little more accurate on them. I was a lot more accurate with Detroit. 10-4-2 this year on picking their games accurately, 11-4-1 a year ago. And I don't know why. I don't know why. I've just been fairly accurate on them for reasons I can't even begin to tell you. I have them in the power rankings 12th, 27th in strength of schedule, 21st in impressiveness of victories, 11th in passing offense, 30th in rushing offense. They can't run at all. 19th in pass defense, 18th in rush defense, 27th in DVOA. There you go, Kyle. 15th in offensive DVOA, 32nd in defensive DVOA, 21st in time of possession. All of this adds up to, again, Seattle is laying 8 points in this one here. I'm not as down on the Lions as you are, just because, again, I think there's an awful lot that can be explained in looking at the teams this weekend. You look at Oakland minus David Carr. We keep saying it over and over again, but probably not often enough. It's a quarterback's league.
Derek Carr.
You have
the me disease where you keep calling him David, yeah.
Derek Carr, yes, Freudian slip. Again, him going down makes a world of difference. Matt Stafford, while he won't win MVP, had
nope.
a heck of a year, an MVP candidate kind of a year. That is what has elevated, and he has. That is what has elevated Detroit into the conversation, is Matt Stafford having arguably his best year, doing it without Megatron. Certainly, if you add that qualifier in, how well he played but with Megatron and how well he played this year without Megatron, I would say arguably it's his best season. He helped elevate them to this spot here. So I'm not as down on them as you are. The Lions have outstanding play at the league's most important position. So that is going to put a floor on how bad I think they are. Seattle, I look at them in this game. I'd have to be really down on them, which I'm not. Not to take them here. I will take them to cover. Seattle, to me, the question they have to answer in the next month is, are they Clemson? Are they a team that just didn't give two craps about the regular season, couldn't be bothered to show up, wake us when it's playoff time? You saw it with Clemson, and you may see it with Clemson again next week. Is that going to be the case with Seattle? I don't know, but it should be the case this week. I don't think that they're absolutely going to house the Lions. I think the outcome of the line will be in play into the fourth quarter, probably about a 10-point win. You'll be sweating it if you take Seattle, but that's my recommendation.
Oh, so you think that Hill Jack Davo with Goldbrick and your boy Hugh Meyer is what you're saying now. That's the story you're sticking to. Okay.
Falling into sleep.
I like Seattle a little bit more than you and a little bit more than most still. I do recognize that they are not as strong as past editions. I think in the entire history of us doing this show together, which I believe dates back to 2012, I want to say?
Yes.
Maybe?
On a week by week, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you know, and that was the year that Seattle kind of broke through, if you remember, into the kind of upper echelon of the league. This is probably their weakest team. I'll actually eliminate the qualifier, probably. It is. Now, that saying, I still have them sixth in the league in my own power rankings. I have Detroit 21st. And by the way, this is not the largest gap of any playoff meeting this weekend in my power rankings, just to give you an idea. That
okay.
is crazy. I will agree with you to a point about Matt Stafford. He's not an MVP candidate. That's preposterous. But he did have his best year, and I know to a lot of people the fact he did it without Calvin Johnson is like a shock. But, you know, when I watched Lions games this year, what made him better is he wasn't so locked on to the one receiver. I think in past years he just had – you know, tunnel vision. He was like, you know, that guy who's got a buzz at a bar and he's just like staring at like the hot chick, you know, and he would get into that with Johnson. He'd just lock into him, and now he can kind of progress through his reads and was just a better overall quarterback, I think. But now that I've said the nice things about Detroit, let's get to the bad, shall we? Because I know they made the playoffs, but Richard G. Morris, this is not a very good football team. They were both outscored and outgained this year. That's indicative of sub-500 level play. And I've said this before on the show, and I'm going to say it again, damn it, because this is astounding to me. There was one game all year where they did not trail in the fourth quarter. One. A 28-13 win against New Orleans in Week 13. They have not covered since then. They, by the way, have lost their last three regular season games. I'm not a believer in momentum, but I think they were really kind of exposed in these last two games against contenders Dallas and Green Bay. They did not beat a single playoff team during the regular season. Their best win, I believe, was a game they won on a last-second field goal against Washington. Keeping with the trend, and here's the thing, too. Stafford really is the reason this team's in the playoffs, because their 8 come-from-behind victories in the fourth quarter, Rick Morris, all-time NFL record. Before this year, only 3 teams had ever had 6. And by the way, the Raiders, who we just talked about, had 7 this year. So you talk about scratching your head. Yeah, 2016 NFL, anybody. And here's something that absolutely has to be mentioned. And I haven't watched a ton of ESPN because it, quite frankly, makes me very angry. The analysis is very bad. I don't care about Mark Schlereff and Teddy Bruschi's take on the New York Giants trip to Miami. I just don't. But this is such a difference maker for me. Second week in a row, Detroit's playing on a short week. You know, it really hurt them.
Yeah.
Going into that Green Bay game last week, they were screwed. They had played Monday the previous week. Green Bay had played Saturday because the Christmas holiday, pardon me, the holiday. And then, now another short week, they're going into the toughest venue in the league, Seattle, where I know they lost the one time to Arizona, but, you know, more often, they don't lose there very often. It's a night game. Google circadian advantage, kids. It always favors the West Coast team. I just think Detroit is up against it here. You're right, they won't get housed, but they'll lose pretty comfortably, and, you know, they're not going to be very good next year. Yes, Earl Thomas is out for Seattle. We should mention that.
Yeah.
That probably hurts them next week a lot against Atlanta. But Stafford hurt his finger a few weeks ago. He hasn't been good. You mentioned how they can't run the ball. Detroit defense, Football Outsiders, you said it, they've got them number 32 in the league. There's only 32 teams in the league. So I think one of the more overrated defenses we have in the league. They had some good numbers early on. They were holding teams, but, you know, I think it was a lot of smoke and mirrors there. Seattle wins here. Well, this is my favorite.
Well, we're at accord on that game, and then on the first game, you abstained while I took Houston. We go to the Sunday games now. It is the AFC wild card matchup, 10-6 Miami at 11-5 Pittsburgh. Only one game separating them, Kyle Rothman, heck or not. 1:05 Eastern time, Heinz Field, Pittsburgh on CBS, Nance Sims, Tracy Wolfson, and for whatever reason, Jay Feely on the game here. This is a game where Pittsburgh is laying 10 up from 7.5 initially. People bet that one up with both feet. Looking at these teams here, I was 9-7 on the accuracy of Pittsburgh this year, 9-8-1 a year ago. With Miami, I was where do I have them here? Now I can't read my own writing. don't have them on the sheet, ladies and gentlemen. So we'll just skip over that. Real professionalism on my part. But Pittsburgh, their numbers here that I want to give you. Pittsburgh was third in our year-ending power rankings, 26th in strength of schedule, 16th in impressiveness of victories, tied for 5th in passing yardage, 14th in rushing yardage defensively, 16th in passing yardage, 13th in rushing defense yardage, DVOA, 5th, 8th offensively, 11th defensively, and 14th in time of possession. A little uncharacteristically low for them. Miami, 13th in my power rankings, 29th in a tie for strength of schedule, 29th in impressiveness of victories, 26th in passing offense, and that was with Ryan Tannehill, who they won't have, 9th in rushing offense, 15th in passing defense, 30th in rushing defense. Put a pin in that one, ladies and gentlemen. 17th in DVOA, 14th offensively, 19th defensively, and 27th in time of possession, which is worrisome given how much they're going to be relying on J.A.J.I. in this game here to do what he did against Pittsburgh the first time out, which, again, Pittsburgh will be looking to avenge as well, a vengeance spot here as well. Listen, I'll be wearing my Dan Marino. I'm too old to say throwback jersey because it's the jersey I wore back in the day. I'll be wearing my Dan Marino jersey and hoping against
good grief.
What do I think is going to happen? I hate the Squealers, but I'm on them. I'll lay the 10.
Remember what I said about Detroit? Miami's
an apple side, aren't you?
Yes. I have Pittsburgh 5th in my power rankings. I have Miami 24th. So there's your one game difference in the standings. I just have very, very little regard for the Fish. I do not understand how they made the playoffs. I understand they played 16 games. I understand they won 10 of them. I do not understand how they won 10 of them. I don't understand how they won two of them with Matt Moore at quarterback on the division road. But I can tell you this, teams that overachieve like this and like Detroit tend to go away rather quickly in the playoffs. And Pittsburgh, to me, along with the team we're going to talk about the next game, if there is a team who can make that run from wild card to Super Bowl, you know, they're on the short list. First time, I believe, in the Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown era that both are healthy with a healthy Ben Roethlisberger going into the playoffs. Here, though, I want to go back to that regular season meeting because I did a double take when I realized it. So I remembered that game. And Roethlisberger got hurt about three quarters of the way through, I think. It wasn't the reason they lost 30-15. They were already behind when he got hurt. But he did get hurt in that game. All right, so I looked at that line, and the line was Pittsburgh -7.5, okay? And I was like, okay, that makes sense. The odds makers had, it's a playoff game now. People aren't going to want to take Miami with a backup quarterback. Lines makers have to shade the number a little higher to try to get some Miami money. Do you realize that they were 7-point favorites in Miami?
Yeah.
That's insane. That's crazy. And now, so it kind of seems like a real value only getting them even at 10 at home against the backup quarterback. Miami's another team. I don't get how they got this through this 9-2 run. Pittsburgh was the one good win they had, but I got to bring this up. 29th in yards per game differential, the Dolphins, outgained by almost 50 yards per game. The only three teams worse than Miami, the L.A. Rams, your Cleveland Browns, and the San Francisco 49ers. That's not very good.
Again, though, that point spread going into the first Pittsburgh game, that was the start. That Pittsburgh game was the start of Miami's big run.
Yes.
They were 1-4 going in, so what would you expect?
Yes, they were.
At that point in time. For the 9-2 run, the only thing I've got to say about this is this. In recent years, this hasn't been the case with Bill Belichick, but in his early years in New England, I think, again, if you look at the statistics of his team versus how they performed on the field, I'll have to look this up, but it's my impression that they kind of overshot what the statistics were a couple of different points in time. I expected an improved Dolphins team under Adam Gase, and while it didn't show up statistically, maybe it just showed up on the win-loss ledger there, Kyle.
New England, and we're not going to get a chance to talk about them this week, their statistics are pretty impressive this year. I think there's a clear-cut case
number one
team in the league.
I mean early 2000s, Kyle. I'm talking early 2000s New England.
You're right. Yeah, you're right. I would not have picked them to beat the St. Louis Rams in that Super Bowl outright. I'll tell you that much if we were doing that show back then.
Right.
It's kind of funny with the Dolphins that you mentioned expected improvement or Adam Gase. Shame on me. This was kind of the year that I thought they were going to have last year. Remember, I picked them to make the playoffs last year, and they massively underachieved, and then now this year they kind of turned it in. So if you would have told me at the start of last season, hey, the Dolphins are going to win 15 games over the course of the next 2 years, I'd be like, okay, that sounds about right. But, that's what they did. I just got the years mixed up. Again, we've been talking about quarterback play. We've really got to harp on the fact it's freaking Matt Moore on the road going again. Ben, Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown. The only thing is, I'm a little worried because they didn't play last week. maybe there's a little rust early in the game. I don't know. Maybe it takes them a while to put away Miami. I don't think they're going to boat race them from the start. But, you know, eventually, Pittsburgh, just far too talented, even without Cam Hayward. And I want to talk about Jay Ajayi for a second, too, Ricky, if I can.
Mm-hmm.
He had the three 200-yard games, okay, this year. One of them was against Pittsburgh. The other two were against Buffalo. But other than those games, like, Miami didn't run for very much. They had less than 100 yards as a team in six of their last seven regular season games. And I kind of did some reading on them during the week. This was a real boom or bust kind of offense, Miami. When they got the offense moving, it was big plays. And that's not really a sustainable way to win games, you're going to find. They only averaged 22 points per game. They're up against it here. You know, and Pittsburgh, I believe, sets up what will be a very intriguing matchup with Kansas City in the divisional round.
Yes, it would be. We're going to have a couple great matchups next weekend. The only great matchup we're going to have this weekend is the one that caps it off. It's the 11-5 Giants at the 10-6 Packers. By the way, final note on Miami, I did find it. I was 9-7 on picking their accuracy this year, 13-3 a year ago. Of the teams we've got in this next game here, 9-5-2 on Green Bay, 13-5 a year ago, 10-5-1 on the Giants this year, 11-5 a year ago. I've been spot on with these two teams, ladies and gentlemen. 4:40 Eastern time for Lambeau Field in Green Bay on Fox is where they'll be playing. The A-team for Fox, unsurprisingly, of Buck Aikman and Andrews in the only game on Fox this weekend. I'm sure there's a correlation there. Looking at these two teams, again, the line on this game, Green Bay is laying 4.5 down from 6.5 initially. Green Bay in my final season power rankings were 16th in strength of schedule, 7th in impressiveness of victory, 7th in passing offense, 20th in rushing offense, 31st in pass defense, 8th in rush defense, 7th in DVOA, 4th offensively, 20th defensively, and 4th in time of possession for the Giants. 7th in my final power rankings, 24th in strength of schedule, 11th in impressiveness of victories, 17th in passing offense, 29th in rushing offense. They also can't run, ladies and gentlemen. 23rd in pass defense, and 3rd in a tie for 3rd in rush defense, rather. 10th in DVOA, 22nd offensively, 2nd defensively, the inverse of what you would have gotten many past seasons, quite frankly, and 29th in time of possession this year. Harkening back to, again, they can't run. So that is something that really kind of makes it interesting looking at this game here, the matchups. To me, it's an obscenity that one of these two teams is going to go home, whereas the winner of Oakland-Houston is going to be playing next week. Life is not fair, as it has been pointed out time and time again here. In looking at this one, again, double revenge spot for Green Bay. Both of New England's Super Bowl wins in the last decade came with unlikely wins at Lambeau. I don't know if this one would be as unlikely.
The Giants,
the way
you
Green
mean.
Bay's been the way Green Bay's been playing recently, maybe it would be as unlikely. I don't know. Green Bay's been the hotter of the two teams. I'm on the Giants in this spot, not least of which, not to be the old wimpo here looking at the line, but I still think Green Bay is more likely to win than not. I'll say probably about a 5/8 chance that Green Bay wins the game. But the number to me is what comes into play. It's basically 2 out of 3 chances here. You've got to make sure that your one chance of Green Bay winning fairly solidly comes up versus I've got if the Giants win, and I've got also if the Giants keep it within 4.5 points. So you're the one that's told me so often, Kyle, how many times these games fall around 3 or 4 points here. So I'm going to take your word for it. I'm on the Giants here to at least cover in this one.
Sharps did come in, as you talked about earlier, and took the Giants plus the points. Mm-hmm. I think the number's too low now at this point. I think there's some value on the pack. And I'm going to make it 3 for 3 with favorites this week. Very unlike me when it comes to regular season picks, but the playoffs is kind of a different story. You know, people kind of view the two teams as largely being even, which isn't always the case, and I certainly don't think is the case this weekend on the majority of the matchups. You already mentioned the 2 times the Giants upset the Packers en route to Super Bowl victories. One time NFC Championship game was against Brett Favre. Then there was that 15-1 Packers team with Aaron Rodgers that they upset the second time around.
In the divisional round. Yes.
Green Bay was 1-done. It's kind of funny. Was that the peak of Aaron Rodgers that year? You know, some may say they really haven't gotten back to that level. They have not been quote-unquote, the best team of the league since that point. They just have not. Now, Rodgers is hot right now. You're talking about a guy completing 70% of his passes at 8.5 yards per pop, 15 touchdowns, no interceptions during a six-game win streak. Hello. So he's playing really well right now. Getting back to the history, though, Giants have covered five straight times against Green Bay. So they've had their number. Two of those, though, were in Brett Favre's last year. So that's not really that relevant here. Regular season rematch, Ricky, again, we have here. Three of the four games this weekend are regular season rematches. Seattle-Detroit is the exception. Green Bay won the first meeting 23-16. They were 7.5-point favorites in that game, so the spread did come into play there. It's smaller here. Misleading final, though. Green Bay outgained the Giants 406-219. They are up 23-9 until the Giants stole the cover with a garbage time or Odell Beckham touchdown with about 2 minutes left. So I think that final score was misleading. The New York Giants I picked to make the playoffs, Rick Morris, if you remember. I picked both Dallas and the Giants to make the playoffs this year. Maybe two of the only things I got right this year. The New York Giants, however, were a lucky team. Now, I figured that some luck was due to go their way because they've been kind of an unlucky team in recent years, but even I was surprised by the amount of luck that went their way. 8-3 in games decided by 7 points or less. The rest of the league, not including the New York Giants, 2-43 in games where they lost the turnover margin by at least three. The Giants were 2-0 somehow. In such contests. The defense was the story for the Giants. It's also going to be the reason that I picked them to regress severely next year. They made a massive jump in DVOA defensively, mainly because they stayed healthy and they had good cornerback play, which they had not gotten. Two things that had not been the case in the last several years with Camp Coughlin. Where was I here?
They spent a lot of money in free agency, too.
Yes. Thank you for saving me there because I wanted to get to, now I know why I forgot about what I was going to say because it's something that Giants fans aren't going to want to hear. This offense is not very good. They didn't score 20 points in any of their last five games. Green Bay, oh, by the way, averaged about 34 points per game the last 4 weeks. In over half of their games, the Giants did not score 20 points. I just don't think they have enough firepower to stay with Green Bay here. I'm going to lay the number.
Okay, so you're taking the dog. We got about a minute left here. By the way, this game with McCarthy and McAdoo, it's the Flair-Luger matchup of this weekend. I taught you everything you know, but I didn't teach you everything I know. So looking ahead in the playoffs
here. Okay.
I told you I was going to pull that one out. Looking ahead here, I'm going to have New England tentatively over Kansas City on Championship Sunday, Atlanta over Dallas, New England over Atlanta, and the Super Bowl as the Dirty Bird makes it down to Houston. How do you have it, Kyle?
God, I'm conflicted on that potential Atlanta-Dallas match, and I'll absolutely be taking the points. But I'm going to go New England over Dallas in the Super Bowl, I think. New England beating Pittsburgh in the AFC Championship game. So sounds like we'll be arguing about, if it comes to fruition, Steelers-Chiefs next weekend.
We could be, although, again, I reserve the right to change my mind based on what we see this weekend. But
me too.
A fun-filled 45 minutes, as always. Thank you so much, Kyle Ross. Appreciate it, as always. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge Mini Episode number 801, previewing the Wild Card Playoffs.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.